furniture.
How do you do both at the same time? It's a good flip.
Yep. No. It's all about the book beat.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Creation of the Fourth Order, Chapter 11. Svayambhuva Manu advises Dhruva Maharaj. Text 21. Ayusho Pachayam Jantos.
Ayusho
pachayam
jantos.
Tataivo pachayam vibhu.
Tataivo
pachayam vibhu. Ubhabhyam rahita svasto.
Ubhabhyam rahita svasto.
Dushtasya vidhathyasau.
Dushtasya vidhathyasau.
Ayusho pachayam jantos.
Ayusho pachayam jantos.
Tataivo pachayam vibhu.
Tataivo pachayam vibhu.
Ubhabhyam rahita svasto.
Ubhabhyam rahita svasto.
Dustasya vidhadhatyasau.
Dustasya vidhadhatyasau.
Ayusho pachayam jantos.
Ayusho pachayam jantos.
Tataivo pachayam vibhu.
Tataivo pachayam vibhu.
Ubhabhyam rahita svastho.
Ubhabhyam rahita svastho.
Duhstasya vidadhatyasau.
Duhstasya vidadhatyasau.
Please go ahead. I'll repeat after you.
Ayusho pachayam jantos.
Ayusho pachayam jantos.
Tataivo pachayam vibhu.
Tataivo pachayam vibhu.
Ubhabhyam rahita svasto.
Ubhabhyam rahita svasto.
Dustasya vidadhatyasau.
Dustasya vidadhatyasau. Thank you. Ayusha.
Ayusha.
Of duration of life.
Of duration of life.
Apachayam.
Apachayam.
Diminution.
Diminution.
Janto.
Janto.
Of the living entities.
Of the living entities.
Tata.
Tata.
Similarly.
Similarly.
Eva.
Eva.
Also.
Also.
Upachayam.
Upachayam.
Increase.
Increase.
Vibhu,
vibhu,
the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Ubhabhyam.
Ubhabhyam.
From both of them.
From both of them.
Rahita.
Rahita.
Free.
Free.
Svastha.
Svastha.
Always situated in his transcendental position.
Always situated in his transcendental position.
Duhstasya.
Duhstasya.
Of the living entities under the law of karma.
Of the living entities under the law of karma.
Vididhati.
Vididhati.
Awards.
Awards.
Sau.
Sau.
He. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, is all-powerful, and he awards the results of one's fruitive activities. Thus, although one living entity's duration of life is very small, whereas that of another is very great, he is always in his transcendental position, and there is no question opening or increasing his duration of life. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Both the mosquito and Lord Brahma are living entities in the material world. Both are minute sparks and are part of the Supreme Lord. The very short duration of life of the mosquito and the very long lifetime of Lord Brahma are both awarded by the Supreme Lord, Supreme Personality of Godhead, according to the results of their karma. But in the Brahma Samhita, we find it said, Karmani Nidrahati. The Lord diminishes or vanquishes the reactions of devotees. The same fact is explained in Bhagavad Gita, Yajyarthat Karmanon Yantra. Yatra. One should perform karma only for the purpose of satisfying the Supreme Lord. Otherwise, one is bound by the action and reaction of karma. Under the laws of karma, a living entity wanders within the universe under the rule of eternal time. And sometimes he becomes a mosquito and sometimes Lord Brahma. To a sane man, this business is not very fruitful. Bhagavad Gita 9.25 gives a warning to the living entities, Yanti, Deva, Vrata, Devan, those who are addicted to the worship of the demigods, go to the planets of the demigods, and those who are addicted to worship of the Pithas, forefathers, go to the Pithas. Those who are inclined to material activities remain in the material sphere. But persons who engage in devotional service reach the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, where there is neither birth nor death, nor different varieties of life, under the influence of the law of karma. The best interest of the living entity is to engage himself in devotional service and go back home, back to Godhead. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur advised, my friend, you are being washed away in material nature's waves of time. Please try to understand that you are the eternal servant of the Lord. Then everything will stop and you will be eternally happy. Om Jnana Tirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namah Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakada Mahyam Tadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Ladita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Kuruna Sindho Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priya Pancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Ayusho Pachayam Jantos Tataevo Pachayam Vibhu Ubhabhyam Rahita Svastho Du Sthasya Viradhadyasau. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu is all powerful, and he awards the results of one's fruitive activities. Thus, although one living entity's duration of life is very small, whereas that of another is very great, he is always in his transcendental position, and there is no question of lessening or increasing his duration of life. This statement is showing that the Lord is not influenced by karma, for in turn, he is in control of it, as evidenced by his ability to award different varieties of life to different types of persons. Some with a short life, some with a long life. This is something we can observe, that there is someone who's born in a rich family, someone who's born in a poor family, someone who's got a long, healthy life, someone who's suffering, someone who's got a short life. This is due to karma, previous activities. Without a conception of karma, a pious person runs into the problem of evil. They get caught up in the issue of what is known popularly as theodicy. Justifying the ways of God to men. If God's all-powerful, all-knowing, and all-loving, why do bad things happen to good people? With view of karma, and specifically reincarnation, then we can understand that actually no one's innocent in this world. The one who's born rich is rich because he's done something to earn it in his previous life. And the one who's suffering now is suffering due to previous choices. This is not to diminish our compassion, but what it does is gives us compassion for every living entity, because we realize that rich or poor, everyone's poor. World, because no one is Krishna conscious. We've all come here to forget Krishna. So we're all in the suffering condition. Whether we're suffering with $1 million problems or $1 problems, we're all suffering. Diseases of poverty and diseases of affluence. The poverty-stricken people are suffering from rickets, polio, and the affluent people are suffering from obesity, cardiovascular disease. But everyone's suffering. Suicide. Suicide is much more rare in third world countries. So there's always some downside to Kaliyama Shashvatam in this material world is miserable to Kaliyama. And if we become so situated, equipoised, that we can tolerate that misery of dukkhalayam and become comfortable here in this world, then it's a shashvatam and it gets taken away. It's temporary. A shashvatam. So there's no hope for a comfortable situation in this material world. Therefore, everyone must strive. And that constant striving, Prabhupada calls it the hard struggle for existence, is conducted within the realm of karma. And there's always a reaction for the work that we do. First, we do something. Then there's a variety of reactions. One is a gross reaction, and then there are subtle reactions, which are categorized into different parts. In the nectar of devotion, those parts are minutely analyzed. I don't have them all committed to memory. But broadly, I'm paraphrasing, there's a seed, there's an almost mature state, and then there's a fully mature state of karma. When we do some activity, first there's the gross reaction, which usually comes first, but then it also produces in us an inclination to do the same thing again. It becomes a habit. There's dormant inclinations, which we might call the subconscious inclinations. And then when we're subjected to the right circumstance, those subconscious inclinations come out to the surface and they manifest as a desire, conscious desire, which we then act on. So that's called prarabdha karma. It manifests. Then there's reactions. There's reactions which we have not yet suffered, but which we will suffer or enjoy, either way, which are not mature. Like if I rob a bank, I'm not arrested yet, but I will be. The reaction is not matured yet, but it will. Or on the flip side, if I build a hospital, I'm not enjoying the result yet, but it will come. There will be good karma for that. So whether we have, and we all have these, because how many actions does a person perform, even in a minute or a day or a lifetime? It's bewildering how many in a lifetime. So we all have a stock of anadi karma palay, the fruits of beginningless karma. We say beginningless because it's been happening since time immemorial. We have this stock of complicated meshes of karma. So we take birth again and again to experience the results of our previous work. The good karma we have will elevate us to a higher standard of life. And the bad karma will bring us down to a suffering condition. But whether good karma, which is known as simply as karma, or whether it's vikarma, wicked activities, forbidden activities, karma or karma, either case, we have to take birth again in this material world, which is Dukkhalayama Shashvatam.
So
the Shastra does not recommend that the purpose of our life should be karma, punya, pious activity. Because this is a prison. Durga, this material world, is a prison house. Durga, it's difficult to get out of. You can't go. Like a fortress or a prison. So whether you're born in the penthouse of the fortress, or in the dungeon, you still can't get out. You're forced to go around and around. You can't stay also in one place. You must move around. Abrama Bhuvana Loka. The Punar. Again and again, they're wandering around this Brahmanda. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, sometimes as word Brahma, Abrama Bhuvana Loka. Punar Vardinoa. They're coming down also and becoming the lowest species. Mamupeta tukonteya punar janmana vidyate. So Krishna is saying, get out. Come to me. It's the only way out. I can pardon you. A life sentence person can get a presidential pardon. We're all on death row. Mrityu Loka. It practically means death row. But we can get presidential pardon by Krishna, by his pure devotee. Therefore, it's said in Chaitanya Charitamrita in a similar verse, Brahmanda Pramite Kona Bhagirana Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bij, that one out of many thousands living entities that are Brahmanda Bharamite, wandering around the Brahmanda, one will get the mercy, the combined mercy of Guru and Krishna. He's very fortunate. Bhagyavan Ajeev. This is Bengali. He's very fortunate. Soul who gets the mercy of Guru and Krishna, which comes in the form of Bhakti Lata Bij. So just as we had this seed of karma which fructifies into the fruit of karma, in the same way we get a seed of bhakti which sprouts in the heart and grows in stages, starting from faith, Shraddha. Shraddha cannot just simply be translated by the English word faith. It's a little more complex than that. It can even be interest. Mere interest is Shraddha. Someone just sees the kirtan party and then suddenly they're interested. That counts as Shraddha. That's also faith. Then what happens? Shraddha, from Rupa Goswami explains that after developing that initial faith, Shraddha, then Tato, Sadhu Sangha, he associates with those sadhus because he's interested. Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya. After associating with the devotees, he notices what else the devotees do, apart from the thing which got in there in the first place. He sees that they have a whole culture of activities. They're bowing in front of the deities, they're dressing a certain way, they have certain etiquettes, they're reading Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, they're doing all kinds of things which are new for him. So Bhajana Kriya, he says, well, I like the way their consciousness is. I like what kind of people they are. they're in the sense that they're nice people. So let me also try to adopt these cultural elements and see if it produces the same effect in me. If I also become a nice person like that. I want to be a nice person. Let's see if this helps. If he's open-minded, he might perform that experiment. That's Bhajana Kriya, including taking initiation from the spiritual master. That's also part of Bhajana Kriya. And then Anartha Nivritti Shad. He gradually gets free from the anarthas in the heart. Nanishta. He's fixed in devotional service. Tata Shak Ruchi. He starts to get a little taste after that point. He begins to enjoy the process of devotional service. So that's the Nishta is the zero point. Previously, we were in the realm of karma. And gradually, once we hit Nishta, that can also be called liberation. Absolutely liberated, because he's no more going into the realm of karma. He doesn't go back down to karma. He's steady. And then gradually, Ruchi comes. He gets taste, and now we're past zero, and we're getting into positive numbers. This is positive life, spiritual life, Ruchi. Ruchi develops further and becomes a Shakti, which is Asakti, which is, Prabhupada compares it to volcanic eruptions, spontaneous, ecstatic feelings that come sometimes. That's Asakti. And he also calls it addiction. You become addicted to Krishna consciousness. Strong desire. Then from Asakti comes a state called Bhava. Actually, I was mistaken. I misspoke anyway. Bhava is what he compares to the volcanic eruptions, which spontaneous ecstasy sometimes happens. And that itself gets more concentrated and becomes steady ecstasy, which is called prema. This is the progression of bhakti's development, given in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Jiva Goswami, Rupa Goswami. But right now we're in karma. That's our condition. These are exalted topics, but we're in karma. So, yastvindra gopamatavendra maho so karma. Bandhan rupa palam bhajana matanoti karmani nidrahati kintu cha bhakti bhajam govindamari purusham tamaham bhajami. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives this translation. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, who burns up to their roots all fruitive activities of those who are imbued with devotion and impartially ordains for each the due enjoyment of the fruits of one's activities of all those who walk in the path of work, in accordance with the chain of their previously performed works, no less in the case of the tiny insect that bears the name of Indragopa than in that of Indra, king of the Devas. So both things are there. He's burning up to the roots all fruitive activities, all karma, of those who are imbued with devotion, the devotees. He frees the devotees of karma. And with the other hand, he's awarding karma to all of those who are not interested in being a devotee. Sometimes, that's another thing. With one hand, he's distributing the mercy. With another hand, he's covering with his Maya potency. Maya has two potencies, a throwing potency and a covering potency. First we're thrown to the material world, and then we're covered so that we think we're independent, so that we can forget Krishna. by contemplating the objects of the senses, then all we see, because we can't see Krishna, all we see is sense objects. By contemplating the objects of the senses, we develop attachment for them. It's a very similar process to how we develop our devotional service. By contemplating the activities of Krishna consciousness, the devotees, we become attached to the practice of Krishna consciousness. We become attached to the devotees. Whatever you meditate on, you become like that, is the universal principle. If we meditate on something material, we become materialistic. If we meditate on God, we become godly. The strongest of the sense objects is generally the opposite sex. That's usually the one that gets people's attention the most. It's said, though, that for a man, it's dangerous to associate closely with the opposite sex, but it's even more dangerous to associate with a man who's attached to the opposite sex.
So,
because by associating with a member of the opposite sex, you'll be bewildered a little for some time, or a lot for some time. But eventually the other side of that situation will come out, the pleasure will turn to pain, naturally. However, if you associate with a man who's completely attached to someone of the opposite sex, all you hear is the good part. And you get a false idealism. And you'll become a hopeless romantic. Hollywood movies, a lot of them are, I would say, most of them, to some degree, embody this principle of a man who's attached to the opposite sex. So watching these movies, it's risky in that sense, because it gives us a fantasy picture where we don't get the whole thing. Sometimes there's something spiritually valuable, but it's risky. Sometimes we can't even avoid seeing these messages. They're just, we're walking around and suddenly there's a television blaring at us. Can't even choose.
Magazines in line at the grocery store.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, devotee association helps with that. We can have some companion to go with us, more safe. In Vedic culture, generally the only persons who are alone are the sannyasis. Everyone else should be in company. And even the sannyasi, he preaches, so there's some chance for association regularly. It's a beautiful lesson so that we don't think we can survive independently. We're being trained to become dependent on Krishna, and if we can first learn to be dependent on others here in this world, we'll be more accustomed, we'll be more humbled, so that we don't think I'm Swarat, I'm independent. Swarat is probably the Sandhi version of Swaraj, I'm guessing, but Dene Brahma, how's it go? This is the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah. Bhagavatam's first verse says, Janmadyastyayaton bayadi taratash charteshva vigna swarat. The word is described as swarat. He's completely independent. We want to be independent because we want to. We want to enjoy this material world. We're imitating the Lord. So Krishna consciousness movement is helping us by giving some kind of society so that we can learn to be dependent on each other. And gradually we'll come to depend on Krishna. Which we can do cooperatively. We can all jointly depend on Krishna. Help each other. There's no need for insurance. In the villages, there's no insurance companies. People back each other up. It's a family. Spiritual life is a family. Okay. Hare Krishna. Would you like to share anything?
I was wondering about sannyasis. Is that why they tend to disappear after they give their lectures? Seems like, I mean, I've seen sannyasis stick around and do kirtan, but usually they're leaving the kirtan. I think I've seen sannyasis from Florida. But it seems like pretty often they give their lecture and then they'll go upstairs
and whatever. I'm guessing they have, especially in ISKCON, the sannyasis are very busy. They have a lot of service. So they probably are on a tight schedule. They have to get back to what they're doing.
So it doesn't have anything to do with sticking to yourself or anything?
No, but Prabhupada did tell Kirtanananda Maharaj in New Vrindavan that you should live in a separate place from the others because you're a sannyasi. So that was one thing. They should at least have separate living quarters. Familiarity. There's this issue of egalitarian culture which is pervasive in our society. Are you familiar with the egalitarian? What that word is indicating? Exactly. Yeah, it's treated like an ideal. The egalitarian ideal is saying that everyone should be treated exactly the same. But Vedic culture is stratified. It's not egalitarian. There's definite levels of value levels of life. If someone has more opulence than you, he should be respected. Because due to his karma, he's in a better position than you are. If someone has more knowledge, that's also an opulence. And I treat him like we're exactly the same, then it will be difficult for me to appreciate what he has to offer me. Because I think, anyway, I'm just like this guy. But if I can value his accomplishments and respect him for that, then naturally I'll want to hear from him and my education will be more organic. The egalitarian thing is artificial. Its artificiality becomes completely manifest in the attitude of, like, the pampered philanthropist or son of a philanthropist who says, "I love poor people, but I don't like how they smell." Means that he won't associate with any poor people, even though he says he loves them. It's superficial equality. Yeah, everyone's equal, but you're not allowed in my house. Also, it's a manifestation of Mayavad. The idea that I could just say impersonalism. Everyone is one. Everything is the same.
So you don't think it's possible to have an egalitarian state of mind and yet have some sort of healthy prejudice? If you're walking down the street and you have an egalitarian state of mind and you see like a group of creepy guys walking towards you and they all are like holding beer bottles and laughing and you know look like they're getting ready to be violent with you, aren't you going to maybe take this other route, or are you following the egalitarian principle by doing that type of thing?
The perfection of egalitarian is samadarshana, to see everyone equally as a spirit soul part and parcel of Krishna. That's the only real egalitarianism. Spiritual egalitarianism is required. Everyone is equally part and parcel of Krishna. Mamaivam sajiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. Eternally, everyone is my part and parcel. That egalitarianism should be cultivated. But materially, no one is equal. We should switch our vision from material vision to spiritual vision. Then we can have true equality. That's the only hope for equality. Communism, egalitarianism, it's all artificial equality. It leads to hypocrisy and cheating. In the name of so-called equality, when no one's looking, then the real colors show.
So you can have egalitarianism on like this artificial sense, but you can't have it in its truest form because there's so many stipulations attached to it. Treat everyone fairly, but don't let poor stinky people into your house, and treat everyone equally, but if you see two black guys walking on the street, hold your purse a little tighter because they might rob. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
It's stipulated so much. I mean, do you even really?
It's emotional. Emotionally.
In pure sense,
you're afraid. The somewhere in the soul, there's a recognition that actually everyone is equal, but they don't realize that they're equal on the spiritual platform. Because the intelligence hasn't been uncovered. Right now, the intelligence is covered with so many gross habits that we can't see straight spiritually. With a little spiritual practice, then things become clear.
I was debating with my dad about the status of animals and whether or not spiritually they're on the same plane they're equal to men. Because I quoted a verse from Ecclesiastes in the Bible where it says, animals and men are the same, and they have the same soul. And my dad he has his own, philosophy or whatever. And he didn't state clearly how he felt about the status of animals on the spiritual level, but he definitely distinguishes animals from men on a material level. And I feel like that's what leads to the mistreatment of other animals, stuff like that. To see them as unequal. But how do you, the best I could do was to, argue with him on a material level. But how do you argue on a spiritual level that animals are spiritually equal to men?
First, on a material level, just because someone is unequal doesn't mean you eat them.
Well, he doesn't eat animals or anything like that. He doesn't believe in that. But he still thinks that humans are superior to animals.
Materially, humans are superior.
I don't think that he thinks that animals can elevate to a human body. I think he thinks that if you're in an animal body, that means you are stuck there. That's what you are.
Yeah, that's a spiritual question. That's another issue. Because once we talk about elevating from one body to another, we've assumed that I'm not my body. That's spiritual. but from the material platform. The animal body is not as good as the human body. The human body can study Srimad Bhagavatam, but if we put the dog in here, he'll come and lick our feet. And not because he's ecstatically humble. He can't help it. Bhagavatam is not meant for the dogs and hogs. Vithara, they're described in Sanskrit as stool eaters. Rishabhdev explains that don't waste your life like the cats and dogs. I think I've got this quote here. Stated by Rishabhdev to his sons in the Srimad Bhagavatam that don't waste your life like the fighting like the cats and dogs.
How do we need to be able to read Bhagavatam in order to love Krishna? Like when Krishna was here, the animals and the plants did worship the mother, even though they were in lower body.
Yeah, that's an
example. There are humans that can't read. Or elevated spiritually.
Yeah. So animals are animals, plants, anything in a species of life less conscious than a human being is gradually coming up to the human platform. They have no karma. They're suffering the results of their previous karma, but they are generating no further karma. Therefore, they're burning off karma and coming up to the human platform. Where again they have an option. Do you want to choose the karma chakra, which leads you down to animal life, or up to demigod life? Anyway, somewhere in the material world. Or do you want to escape this material world? The human form is the loophole by which we can get out of this material world through inquiry into the absolute truth. Therefore, Vedanta starts janmadyasya yataha. Sorry. It begins that way. That's another thing. But the Vedanta Sutra I meant to quote says, Atato Brahma Jignasa, now, therefore, inquire into the absolute truth. What is that now, therefore? Now, therefore, that since you're a human being, inquire into the absolute truth. You've made it. Now, inquire into the absolute, which is something the animals cannot do. So our equality with animals is on a spiritual platform. How do we argue from the spiritual platform about the equality of animals and humans? If you pinch me, I hurt. If you pinch the dog, he hurts. We're both conscious. Consciousness is the symptom of the soul. If you pinch the rock, it doesn't hurt. Consciousness is a symptom of the soul. They have feelings too. If you show a child, and it's like the human psychology is also geared toward the protection of animals from birth. Later it can be manipulated, but from childhood age, it's natural that if you bring a 5-year-old child or 4-year-old child, if you throw a lump of clay on the ground, it splats, he'll laugh. But if someone throws a cat on the ground and it dies, he'll cry. It's innate morality. No one had to teach the child that that's wrong. Who knows? You don't do that. Kant says it's a priori. I can't pronounce Latin properly. Please forgive me. A priori, maybe. That's probably better.
As a rule.
Priori means prior, right? So it,
first.
Yeah.
First thing first.
Yep. It's a priori. So our psychology can get manipulated from that point so that we can justify it. Immoral activity. And so if at that point, if we want to again understand things naturally, we have to change our habits. Get free from our conditioning. Prabhupada was saying a few times that meat eating prevents people from understanding the philosophy properly. So with the Christians, he would so often, before he'd get into deep topics of philosophy, he would just say, please stop eating meat.
That was often his way of getting into the deeper topics of, you know, what is the soul and what that, I think, you know, by talking about eating meat and with people, you know, especially Christians, the first thing they want to say is that the animal doesn't have a soul. And then they get into this topic, you know, how do we know whether or not an animal has a soul?
But Ecclesiastes, huh, says that they do.
It's arguable because in most languages, the word for soul is usually ambiguous. You know,
like atma.
In other words, yeah, atma can mean your mind, yourself, your body, your soul. It can mean so many things. And in Hebrew or Aramaic, whatever language that Ecclesiastes is written in, there's a little footnote in my Bible that says could also mean, I think it says breath in the actual text. Could also be soul. You know, in other words, we're gonna go with the breath thing so that we can still eat them, you know. But I mean, I think
even a child
soul,
knows
it means life, you know. So we all have this life force in us, you know.
Yeah.
It would be hard to say that, to take the context that he was saying, you know, kind of men and animals are equal, men and animals are equal. It would be hard to take that context. And then say, when he says, we all have the same breath, that they're just talking about the wind passing in and out of your lungs. You know, I highly doubt that he was just talking about the wind that goes in and out of your lungs. He was probably talking about the life force, you know. Yeah, and that's like a really clear cut for me, you know. And I usually bring that up to the Christians who challenge me about the soul. And the last person I talked to said that I was taking it out of context. And I was like, I don't think you can take something like that out of context. That would be like saying if I say 1 + 1 = 2, that I'm wrong because I'm taking it out of context. You know, it's a, you know, self-evident. You know, it's one of those self-evident things. You don't even need context. You know, if someone says men and animal are equal, but they both have the same soul. You know, I mean, it's hard to add any context to that to reverse what you're saying.
Yeah.
You know, so yeah, it's a good quote.
Even in the Quran, it said, maim not the brute beasts.
I think there's some subsects of Islam also that are borderline vegetarian, reluctant. The main leaders say, well, if you do want to eat meat, you have to kill the animal yourself, and you have to look him in the eye when you're doing it. You know what I mean? Stuff like that. And how many people are willing to do that?
Yeah.
In other words, you have to make sure you're fully accountable for your actions. And I think that with the Kshatriyas too, they had to volunteer full accountability if one may.
Prabhupada also said that wait till the animal dies of natural causes if you want to eat the meat.
And then you're defeating their whole purpose of eating it.
Yeah.
Because it tastes good, if, you know, it doesn't taste as good when the animal is old and whatever.
Okay. Did that, was that good for what you were asking? I think I went all over the place on it.
Oh.
It's okay.
I felt like you guys kind of said the same thing, but kind of different, you know? The equality of the soul part, you guys, you know, just as I figured, you know, Vedic philosophy differs, but equality on a material platform between men and animals. You know,
I can't go hug a tiger.
Aside from men's ability to perform spiritual activities, I personally don't see the difference between men and animals. I don't think that they're on a higher level. Because there's, you know, there's things that we can all do that the others can, but the ego can see better, you know. The
apart from
stronger.
Apart from spiritual activities, you don't see any difference. Mm-hmm. What about driving a car?
Like I said, there's things that we can do better on an intellectual level, but we can't see as well as the bird, the owl, and the eagle. We can't.
That's
we're not
true.
As strong as the tiger and the elephant, you know.
Absolutely.
We can't smell like the dog. So every species has their good qualities and bad qualities.
Prabhupada would play on this sometimes. He would say that if you want to have sex life, then it's better that you take birth as a pigeon because they can have sex 40 times a day. And that's what will happen. If you live your life like if you want to eat anything, then you'll take birth as an animal who can more effectively and efficiently fulfill that desire. Human form is not so good for that, so better become a tiger, or better become a pigeon, or if you want to sleep, better become a bear. Human life is meant for inquiry into the absolute. That's its dharma. Bear dharma is to sleep. Okay. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Prabhupada ki jai. Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you, David.